So I would like to call this Board of Education meeting for June 18th, 2018 to order. May I get a roll call, please?
Mr. Davis is not here. Mrs. DeGracias.
Here.
Mrs. Hickey.
Here.
Mr. Martieri.
Here.
Mr. Moore.
Here.
Dr. Thompson.
Here.
Ms. Williams.
Here.
Okay, first thing we always do is recognize visitors and invite comments from the public. Anthony, anyone signed up?
No, they're all here to talk later, but let's see.
But it's fun to recognize you all anyway, and many of you, in fact, I do.
Hold on one second. Did you, are we speaking? Oh, I'm sorry, we do have one.
If it's okay to have a cross-border jumper speaking at your board meeting.
You know, they're open meetings, so the rules are, yeah, you could actually fly in from Hawaii, wherever, and go ahead and speak.
I didn't bring my Aloha shirt, otherwise I'll do that. That sounds like a better plan.
So, David, if you'd like to, we'll start with your comments. If you'd like to stand up and say your piece, and please give us your first and last name.
David Yamashita. I'm a resident of Oak Park, 827 Belfort Avenue. Currently, I am retired, but I also am a committee member for the Youth Services on the Oak Park Township. That's my colleague, Cal Davis, just entered the room.
Who is a great American, by the way. We all do.
So as a committee member for Youth Services, I work closely with D97 students and staff over the past year as a volunteer conducting cargo circles for fifth grades. In that process, I've learned an awful lot about what's needed at the youth level, particularly within the relationship with the schools. I'm here to comment on the importance of this intergovernmental agreement supporting the youth interventionist program. I have to admit, like most residents of both our communities, that wondered why we have a village and a township government. I grew up in California. We just had city government. We had unified school districts. We just didn't have all this stuff. Now, the good news is we all have great boards and a lot of committed community members. But as we have an increasing tax burden, there's plenty of people calling out for reduction in government. And I would have been one of those people. But having run for the D97 board and then being asked to work on the Youth Services Committee, it's been an overwhelming education on how the government bodies work and what are the needs within the school districts and the community at large, particularly regarding youth. So what I found is that the youth services at the township is really a connective tissue between many of the government bodies. They're working real closely with D97 on some of the restorative practices, as well as initiatives to try and improve communication, respect, conflict resolution, and basically breaking down barriers between the students. We have 8 tribal elementary schools on the Oak Park side. You have 2 here. We have 3 middle schools going into the high school, and we believe that the cargo circles may be a structure that helps break down some of these barriers if we actually are able to implement what's planned now is to introduce these into the Oak Park Middle Schools and hopefully into the River Forest side as well. And hopefully that is a benefit for the River Forest students in that my daughter's a freshman at the high school, and it is pretty clear that River Forest friends she has segregate away from most of the Oak Park side. So that's probably, I think, a loss in many ways. But all the districts, governmental bodies are implementing some great policies around equity, trying to really reach opportunities for all our youth. And those are great policies, but the boots on the ground is what I'm finding Youth Services does very well. So that's one of the areas that I think continued support from D90 is going to be appreciated and actually necessary. I think it's a real opportunity to continue that work, and certainly I can provide some insights into that as well. But thank you for the time. I appreciate it.
Thanks, David, and you're welcome to come across Harlem Avenue anytime. Come visit us strange folks in River Forest. All right, I do need a motion to approve the agenda, but I'm going to point out we have a couple of presenters here tonight. We have Green for Good presenting and Tri-Board Equity Committee is presenting, so as soon as everyone is there from those two organizations, we're just gonna bump them up in the agenda and let them present so they don't have to sit through the whole board meeting. It's sort of a be kind to your presenters thing. But other than that, I would like to have an approval of the agenda. Motion to approve.
So moved.
Second.
Ms. Williams?
Yes.
Dr. Thompson?
Yes.
Mr. Moore?
Yes.
Mr. Martyri?
Yep.
Mrs. Hickey?
Yes.
Mrs. DeGrassi?
Yes.
Mr. Davis?
Yes.
Excellent. Communications.
We have here a single note. On the front, it says, "Thank you. Dear Dr. Condon and District 90 Board of Education, I am writing to thank all of you for the wonderful retirement celebration and thoughtful gift. The dinner was a truly meaningful and memorable occasion. As I mentioned in my speech, it has truly been an honor to work with D90 for 27 years. My memories of River Forest will include an extremely supportive board, hardworking and passionate administrative team, and an amazing staff, students, and families. I sincerely thank you for such a rewarding career and wish D90 community well for the future. Sincerely, Karen Bazell."
Oh, it's Karen. Very, very, very nice. I thought it was my mom for a second. Ed, that brings up any Freedom of Information Act
request? We did just have the one this month. This was from the Illinois Retired Teachers Association asking for information about our forthcoming retiring Illinois educators.
Excellent. All right, so now we're going to move into a motion to approve the consent agenda, which includes minutes from the Board of Education meeting on May 21st, 2018 in the closed session, Committee of the Whole meeting June 5th, 2018 in closed session, and payrolls orders relating to payrolls, bills, and treasurer's report. Can I get a motion to approve?
So moved. Second.
Mr. Davis?
Yes.
Mrs. DeGrassi?
Yes.
Mrs. Hickey?
Yes.
Mr. Martyri?
Yes.
Mr. Moore?
Yes.
Dr. Thompson?
Yes.
Ms. Williams?
Yes.
All right. You relieved, Anthony?
A little bit.
Yeah, all right. Board committee reports now. We start with Dr. Thompson and education.
We haven't had a recent meeting.
Okay. Rich, personnel?
There's a report that we'll review later.
There is nothing to report.
And there was much rejoicing. Awesome. He has nothing
yes.
to report.
It's coming,
Stacy.
The calm before the storm.
Finance, Cal.
Let's see, in our packets we have accounts payable and treasurer's report.
Okay. And I imagine everyone noticed that there is a letter to the editor in the newspaper suggesting that maybe the fiscal management at D200 and D90 was not up to snuff given that they built up reserves. You should know that we are in the process of writing a response op-ed piece, and Dr. Condon and Anthony have really gone out of their way to make sure that I'm not too snarky with my comments when I get back into that. So, but we will be responding to that piece. Equity Committee, we have not met since the last report. Facilities, Judy?
Nothing new to report.
Barb, anything from the communications world?
I believe communications has a wonderful document in your packet for a little bit later on.
Is this with all our color coding and
this
everything?
This is our inspired color coding.
Yes. I think you need more blues, though. You're going to hear that comment from me. A lot of those are ongoing. But otherwise, yeah, good stuff.
I think we did the last one.
Gender Inclusion Committee, Barb and Rich.
I believe we reported this past meeting out at our previous board meeting. There's nothing new.
We are going to reach out to District 200 to talk with them about their process in developing policies. And Ed and I and Rich have talked a little bit about that. Ed has reached out to administration at the high school, and I may reach out to a few of my contacts on the board to discuss the method that they used to get where they got, because we figured they had already been down that road in terms of communication with the public and how to approach the issues so as to include all of the necessary voices. So we're going to build on future wisdom. It takes a little time, but that's our plan.
That's the right way to go. All right, so outside meetings that we've attended, there has not been another Council of Governments since I last reported out. The next one's scheduled for October. Community Council, Rich?
Next one is in the fall.
Excellent. How about the Youth Network Council?
Youth Network Council met last week, and the discussion was primarily Well, we talked about the interventionists, which will come up a little bit later in tonight's meeting, and the value that we think that I spoke up and said I think River Forest is getting significant value from that project. The Youth Network Council includes mental health organizations, and everyone is gearing up for the summer when the lives of young people change because they are not in school. The pantry is offering, the food pantry is offering meals for lunchtime for those who need them, at and I believe maybe breakfast too, over at St. Catherine St. Lucie. And so that will be available. That obviously does not service our kids as much as the ones in Oak Park, but there is a long-standing wish to make sure that kids are not hungry in the summertime. And there are a number of different organizations doing outreach to kids over the summer to make sure that those needs get met, even though the kids are no longer in school, which is a good thing to know.
Excellent. And keep the floor there, Barb.
PTO council. Council has not met.
Okay. IAB, Stacy?
We are on hiatus until the fall.
Excellent. The now finally appropriately named in our agenda, the River Forest Civic Action Association, or Civic Association. Dr. Nicole Thompson.
I have nothing to report.
Excellent. They did have a nice parade, though.
Yes.
Yeah. They did, and they did do their hot dog service.
They did do their hot dogs.
They did do it.
They got it done.
They got it done.
Citizen Corps Council, Judy.
They have not met recently.
Okay. Westcliff Governing Board is meeting in 2 days, I think. And so I will be there, and I'll report back at the next meeting. I was not able to make that Ed Red meeting. At an emergency come up at the office. Ed, were you able to make it?
I was, right. Yes. Some discussion about implications predominantly of the new legislation surrounding the salary cap and the passage of the budget, the state budget. They also did a nice farewell for the current Ed Red director who's leaving the organization. He's brought a lot of service for the last several years. So they've named a new successor. And they will do kind of an official welcome to her with the organization this fall.
I think the successor is coming out of Senate staff, I think that's right.
I had called her the successor because I couldn't remember her name. But
yeah, no,
Sarah Hardwick?
Yeah, I think that's right. She's coming out of the Senate Dem staff in
okay.
Springfield. So she certainly knows the Springfield playing field very well. And, you know, Ed Red does do a lot of lobbying, so that will be positive for her.
Absolutely.
The River Forest Subcommittee on Collaboration, Ms. Hickey.
Has not met recently. Positive Youth Development is working on pulling their leadership team together to talk about sustainability going forward sometime in the next couple of weeks.
Okay, excellent. The Tri-Board Equity Committee is going to have a recommendation. We're going to wait for Sarah to come in and have you guys present. And I get to listen and ask questions and do stuff like that, so that'll be great. But thanks for coming, Catherine. Catherine's been incredibly great partner and very just incredibly thoughtful in her approach to dealing with these issues. So I'm very excited about that report coming later on. So I think what we'll do now, we'll do the very first action item, Dr. Condon, if that's okay with you, because we had someone come here to ask us about that, and then I think we'll jump to green for good in the informational items so they don't have to wait around through all those other action items, and they can leave if they so desire. So
thank
the
you,
first
Ralph. We're waiting for Laura May.
Oh, sure. Laura's not here yet.
7:30.
Okay, very good. Okay, let's pop out these action items and fly through. So
all right, so to launch us this evening, the superintendent's report, we have the Youth Interventionist Program Intergovernmental Agreement. Board members will find this in their packet on page 58. I'm sure it will look familiar. I think the board had a chance to see this at a first glance last month. And so we were bringing that forward for board consideration and hope for a motion. If there's no discussion, a motion to approve.
Yeah, the only thing, I mean, I think everyone noticed that the village has sent a letter saying there would not be funding this time around. I think you all saw that. So the River Forest Village just felt that it wasn't appropriate in the context of the legal authority of their levy and what their taxes go to, that it was really more of a township levy item. I think that was some of the point David was making when he presented to us earlier about the differentials in the different governmental entities. I have no comments having read through it other than, you know, minimum qualifications are then described as guidelines, but other than that, minimum is a minimum, but apparently there's just a guideline and they have a different utilization of the English language. So, do we have any discussion of the intergovernment, the proposed intergovernment agreement?
No changes since last month when it was presented.
Can I get a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second.
Ms. Williams?
Yes.
Dr. Thompson?
Yes.
Mr. Moore?
Yes.
Mr. Martyri?
Yes.
Mrs. Hickey?
Yes.
Mrs. DeGrassius?
Yes.
Mr. Davis?
Yes.
Thank you very much. The next item that's on the agenda is also an intergovernmental agreement. This is for the utilization of shared transportation service with Forest Park, School District 91. This is an opportunity for some collaboration. Quite frankly, we have a special needs student that Forest Park has transportation capacity and can take this child to one of the private programs to which he is assigned. We feel like the relationship's a good one. They can do it affordably, and it's good, most importantly, it's good for the young person. So we do, obviously, to embark upon this relationship with another entity, have an agreement in place to oversee that, and a lot of that is for liability as much as anything else. But I'd like to thank Anthony, and I'd like to thank Karen Buzel, our retiring special education director, for taking the steps to make this a possibility. So we present that for your approval tonight. It was reviewed, as I hope you would expect, by the board attorney and approved. The language changes that he recommended have been agreed to by the Forest Park School District, and they have signed off on our requested changes.
Excellent.
In addition, this, if approved tonight, will start Wednesday of this week.
So no sleeping on this one. So is there any further discussion? It was in your packets, pretty clear. Mm-hmm. IGA, I think. And the insurance provisions look appropriate.
We're both in the same insurance cooperative, should be easy to obtain.
Yeah. All right, so if there's no discussion, may I get a motion to approve?
So moved. Second.
Mr. Davis?
Yes.
Mrs. DeGrassius?
Yes.
Mrs. Hickey?
Yes.
Mr. Martyri?
Yes.
Mr. Moore?
Yeah.
Dr. Thompson?
Yes.
Ms. Williams?
Yes.
Thank you very much for that. We also, this evening, are bringing forth the recommended service agreement with the National Equity Project for the coming year. There are a couple of key elements that we wanted to draw the board's attention to here, and I know Ralph or possibly Stacy may have things they wish to share as well. First and foremost, I'd like to thank Kathleen Osta for her efforts, not only to bring us to this point, she's the facilitator for the National Equity Project, but for the work that she helped to do specifically in bringing forth this agreement. In order to forge this recommended agreement, she spent some time, I know, with Dr. Hawley talking about our curriculum needs. Kathleen and I also spent some time together talking about some of our leadership needs and developmental needs. And all of that, as I hope you would expect, went into the creation of this document. She also, at the Board of Ed's request, spent some time really reflecting and digging into the work that we've been doing over the course, reflecting on and digging into the work we've been doing over the course of the last couple of years to try to provide, I think, you all with some feedback about, from an experience perspective, the progress that she feels the district is making, and I think importantly, the opportunities that are still there for growth. The agreement reflects specifically our needs as far as where we are today. I think if you were to hold this agreement, proposed agreement, up against the last two, you'll see that this one's substantially different in terms of where the areas of focus are. The board won't be surprised that the main areas of focus are really looking at now implications for the curriculum, looking at implications for pedagogy, and supporting our school administrators, our site administrators, in being able to lead for equity in ways that really aligns with our board's strategic goals and with our intentions about you know, making sure that equity is really living and breathing throughout the culture of our district. So that's what's before you. I suspect maybe, again, if there are other comments that you...
Yeah, I'd certainly love... I mean, I know you've all reviewed it because it's one of those great boards where everyone reads the packets, but and Stacy, I really want to get your input too, but what I really liked about it was it seemed like they listened to not just the faculty, that they did, and the administrators, but also the board, and our concerns with how to be effective with an equity initiative. You look about, it talks about embedding the practice in the classroom. It talks about doing what it takes to get done, systems change, and how difficult that work is. And it talks very clearly and more than once about how an equity initiative is also an excellence initiative, and that there needs to be outreach to the community and focus on that aspect of the work to ensure we have full community buy-in. I think that that's wonderful. And I do like, when you look at the list of services, that there is going to be not just leadership development for the administration and faculty, but also for the board on an ongoing basis. I mean, we're going to have some continuing professional development, and I think that's crucial, not just so that we understand what we're doing and we can put in place appropriate accountability metrics, et cetera, which once again is a focus of this work, another thing I like. But also I think we need to model the behavior we talk about, right, as board members. And I think getting professional development, making sure that we're dealing with the same issues, whatever imputed biases we have, et cetera, is important. And it's a way for us to do our jobs the right way. So I'm very excited about it. I think it's a great proposal.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely seems different to the point that Ed made. I love the community engagement piece. I think that's critical. You know, and I think at the end of the day, it comes down to, because our teachers are always asking us, what does this mean for me every day in my classroom? You know, based on what we've been doing so far, what can I do that's different from what I've done before? And it seems like this is a good path to get us there. You know, it's hard to know until we dig into it, but I think it definitely seems like a really good direction.
At the equity event that we attended last month, I think it was the Hackman Group presented a really nice conceptual framework. And I think that we snapped a picture of it and sent it to Kathleen and said, hey, you know, does the NEP have this? And of course they do, we just haven't seen it. Mm-hmm. So did she bring that up in your conversation? Is this that conceptual framework? Maybe I'll circle back then.
Which conceptual framework was it?
With the Hackman Group was the first presenter at the equity event. And we were sitting next to each other and said, that's a really nice, easily understood framework. Mm-hmm. So took a picture, sent it.
We would love to share that with. Yeah, love to share that with her.
She said she had one, and she was going to bring it back to you.
Very nice.
Seems like they're. I was forgetting the names of the people, but I underlined it, so that's good that they've adapted the Dalmu and Wheatley conceptual framework or six circle model, and they have that broken down in their proposal. So. Yes. No.
No, I think it's great. Just remembering from that same workshop that he was talking about, just, you know, her stressing that how it just takes, you know, such a, you know, period of time just to actually make a difference. And I think we're being deliberate in taking all the steps that we, you know, need to take so we can actually see some changes down the road. So.
Yeah, I mean, the systems change is the hardest thing you can do. Yeah. And we literally are changing a system. And I think they get that. From this proposal, it seems pretty clear.
They do great work.
They do. And importantly, not to belabor, but building on your comment, Kathleen and the National Equity Project facilitators understand how their work needs to complement the other important learning that our faculty and staff are doing. Mm-hmm. The board is very well aware, our audience may not be as much, that we're really moving towards full adoption of the Universal Design for Learning framework as a pedagogical approach. And it's been reassuring. I won't speak for Dr. Hawley, but certainly for me, and I suspect for her as well, to see the way in which the National Equity Project facilitators understand that they need to be working in concert with our partnership with CAST, who's mm-hmm. our main professional developer in the area of Universal Design, so that, you know, both of those initiatives are moving in tandem. We're being thoughtful about it. And I think it's that kind of aligned support that hopefully will be what our teachers really need to ensure that we're all rowing in the same direction. Excited about it, very genuinely.
At some point, we're going to have to incorporate the community as well. Maybe have a town hall or something.
Yeah. And, well, hopefully we'll, you know, hopefully Cal will do another tri-board in January. And, you know, we have that town hall forum
draft of possible
discussions.
Topics.
We could always put another focus on that, just in a River Forest town hall forum too, to really just say, all right, community, you've had the tri-board, you've had this, you've had that. Where are the gaps in understanding? Da, 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 da. We could do another that. And maybe we could even make that a specific topic to address during the listening session, where we could bring that up as a question asked of our stakeholders here in the community, right? So that's a good point. All right, is there further discussion?
It is a significant expenditure, but yes. Obviously it seems to be in line with our other goals and objectives.
It is significant. It's roughly running around the costs for this, more or less the cost for the last couple of years. In 17, the partnership cost was about $40,300, and then in 16, as memory serves right, it was closer to 48. But
it was exactly 48.
So, you know, we were grateful that they were willing to
talk
with us.
Memory when you have Anthony.
we happen to know someone who has that number at his fingertips.
Okay. I didn't know the first year though, so yeah. Kudos to Ed.
So they've been willing to talk with us about where possible containing some costs, and that's helpful. So.
Yeah, any place we can consolidate and share those expenditures. The money goes as far as we possibly can is always a good idea.
I agree.
Is there a goal for what happens beyond 2019? I mean, it's not meant that this is to be the annual thing, right? Have you talked with Kathleen about what's the future plan?
Well, so that's a great question. A lot of that will come at the direction of the board. In 2019, if we follow our past model, District 90 would be embarking upon the creation of a new five-year strategic plan. And that is a great opportunity to really pull community members together, ensure that you have all those voices in the room, do a pulse check. I can't imagine this isn't the work that the community would value and want to see continue. But once we affirm that, I think that would be a time to get a feel for what flavor that should take, you know, what's important. Nicole's point is very well taken. This is definitely long throw work. That having been said, we need to start, you know, at some point providing some good data and feedback to our families that these investments
right.
are showing benefit.
Right.
Even if it's, you know, perception data or other, you know, anecdotal feedback. So hopefully by that time we'll start to have some data coming in, and maybe that too can be used to help us set some direction.
And that's a good point, and it's actually a meaty part of their proposals to get to sort of these measurables. That's
mm-hmm.
important. I'm assuming this is all being done in conjunction, right? Because there's that group that's of faculty members working with the administration on accountability metrics, with the equity committee working on that. So this is going to be a unified approach, right? We're all pulling our oars in the same direction.
We are, but I want to make sure that I'm worried that I didn't answer your question explicitly. I think this is one of those relationships where if it continues to provide strong value for the district,
mm-hmm.
that it could go on into perpetuity.
Mm-hmm.
It may not, though, require as significant a financial investment year after year.
Right.
We might find that we get to a point, wouldn't it be wonderful, where we have them on the equivalent of a retainer, or
mm-hmm.
they would come in and provide possibly some, you know, executive coaching for the administrative team or things like that, where the supports are more targeted.
Well, and they'll always need to help us with new hires.
Right.
To keep the culture ongoing. That would hopefully become a smaller part of what they do.
I would think that this also provides a lot of professional development opportunities as well, which is, you know, always a good thing to have.
Yeah, no, I agree with that completely.
But they're helping us to develop the ability to do some of that. So one of the elements that you see embedded within here, we talked at length, was the importance of ensuring that our new hires are encultured into District 90's way of thinking about supporting students through an equitable lens. So they're going to help us in this coming year develop a new teacher mentor component that will help to build that. And then our goal will be that we continue to refine that. And once it's built, we'll, you know, implement it ourselves. So, you know, it's the whole teach a man to fish kind of thing.
Right.
So anyway, great questions though.
So, if there's no further discussion, may I get a motion to approve the agreement with the National Equity Project?
Second.
I'm sorry, Ms. Williams?
Yes.
Dr. Thompson?
Yes.
Mr. Moore?
Yeah.
Mr. Martyri?
Yes.
Mrs. Hickey?
Yes.
Mrs. DeGrassis?
Yes.
Mr. Davis?
Yes.
All right, so I think now what we're going to do is shift in the agenda to some of the informational items that we have scheduled. And Beth, are you guys here?
Yep.
And I now know that the tri-board is here, so we're going to start with Green for Good, since I think they got here first. But we are moving up in the agenda nonetheless.
Okay, I'd like to kick this off by giving you the Green for Good annual overview, our sustainability overview. There'll be some individual building reports as well as a student presentation, and I'll let them introduce themselves as they come forward. But if you remember, back in October of 2017, we met as a kind of a follow-up and planning meeting with Green for Good. There were several administrators, Dr. Kahn and myself, Dr. Pauly, and with a facilitator, Jim Kelly, to go over value statements and a kind of a plan for the future. And what we came up with, after we worked very closely with members of Green for Good, PTO members involved in there as well, came up with a value statement which we brought forth to you as a board, and you included it in your strategic plan. For the members of the audience, I'll read that. We believe in ensuring a sustainable future for and with our students. We will model sustainable practices for our students and community. We will provide opportunities for students to learn about and engage in sustainable practices. And I was, everyone was very grateful that the board was willing to include that in their 2015-2020 strategic plan midway through that plan. In addition to that, we went through a long exercise to try to determine a kind of a three-year plan. A process to go forth on what we were going to do to try to help consolidate these efforts into a district-wide initiative. And we came up with a one-year initiative, a two-year initiative, and a three-year initiative. And the first-year initiative, to reduce waste, we were going to install hand dryers in the main bathrooms of the building, which the process of that right now, the process is that we have contracted with that company, with World Dryer Company, and are including that in this summer's activities, for facilities. You've seen that in the long-range facility plan. Year two initiative is to establish an active sustainability club at all schools. So we reached out to some faculty volunteers, or to the faculty for volunteers, and some have come forth. And when they return in the fall, they're gonna put together a value statement as well, and some ideas to bring forth to try to get those sustainability groups or clubs off the ground. And then year three, in accordance with a science curriculum in 2019-20, adopt a sustainable curriculum at each grade level, and working with Dr. Hawley to get an inventory of where that science curriculum is right now and how we can include and weave curriculum, those areas into the curriculum for sustainability. So we feel that that was a very large effort, and we're happy to work with Green for Good, continuing to work with Green for Good. We've also agreed to have them come to, we'll meet a couple times a year and discuss the individual schools' plans as well as the district-wide plans, and they'll come and report to you annually, of which this is the first one. So I'd like to turn it over to the group, and should we have a presentation from those students?
So we have presenting to you tonight, Charlotte Meyer in eighth grade, and Ms. Rains is here. Yes, you do want to do introductions. I mean, Mr. Cadillac's going to be here tonight, but this was essentially the pilot student club at Roosevelt. So I'm going to let them speak for themselves about their wonderful work. So,
I think I have the privilege of introducing you. Good evening. I'm Amy Rains, and I'm here on behalf of both Corey Cadillac and myself. He has a class tonight, so he's not able to be here, but we have a very dedicated two eighth graduates, now we call them students, and unfortunately Charlotte is only one of the two that could be here. Mackenzie Lovell was the other student who worked throughout the entire year mainly with Mr. Cadlick on various projects, mm-hmm. Green for Good, that they came up with, that they worked with the Green for Good committee to do throughout the year, some gardening and things, and Charlotte will explain that. The way that I got involved was after a audit of the lunch program, we found that the new fifth graders to the building were not sorting their lunch waste the way that we would like. So we had some numbers, and Charlotte and Mackenzie and Corey Cadlick got together and said, well, we need to educate them. We need to tell them. They came up with a project, which Charlotte will explain, and they worked through the tech program, because I see every fifth grader, so they came and presented to all six of my classes. After that, we were doing our final assessment for our desktop publishing, and we had to pick a topic. And the students were so enthusiastic with Charlotte and Mackenzie's presentations that we decided that that would be the topic for their posters. So Charlotte will explain that, and she has her products that she and Mackenzie made, and she also has the posters that they selected from the fifth graders. The fifth graders also had the choice, so some of them made some short videos and PowerPoints that were shown to their students as well. But these were the projects that then also were presented to the Village Sustainability Committee. So they have had a lot of recognition, rightfully earned, and she will explain more of her project. So, Charlotte Meyer.
So, in the fall, we started with doing some gardening out in the front of the school, and then about midway through the school year, when Mr. Cadlick did an audit and found out that the fifth graders weren't sorting their waste properly, Mackenzie and I got up a presentation, and we went to each class of the fifth graders, and we explained to them how to properly sort their waste. And then, as Mrs. Rain said, they were pretty enthusiastic about it, so they also made posters. We taught them how to properly compost, recycle, and put things in the landfill and what goes where, especially because of the milk cartons, which were just recently announced that could be recycled. So they were especially didn't know about that, so we helped them with that. And they also made these posters with the guidance of Mrs. Range.
I can't show why you keep talking.
And they had two topics to choose from for their posters, about plastic bags or about how to properly sort waste. And Mackenzie and I chose our favorites of them to bring here tonight. And then Mackenzie and I were noticing that a lot of people had Ziploc bags, which are used once and then thrown out. And we wanted to solve that and reduce the amount of plastic bags that were being used in the lunchroom. So we sewed up some reusable bags to put lunch snacks in, and on Earth Day we sold them, and the day after Earth Day also, and we made $78, which we donated to the Riverport Sustainability Commission.
I know you have a full agenda tonight, so we're each going to be brief, but we have parent representatives from each of the schools. And I'll just say, as you know, parent participating with Green for Good, just really grateful to Dr. Cunnan, Anthony, Dr. Holly, and the board for making sustainability a part of the district's strategic plan. I will just comment that to me the most exciting thing about this is the student-centered aspect of it. You know, Green for Good has been like a parent-initiated thing, and then the district came into it, and now it's the student piece inspiring, you know, and having students like Charlotte River inspire us. The other thing I'll comment on is just that the district has, you know, really been a leader in the community, and we look forward to seeing a lot of that continued collaboration. I have like another hat that I started wearing in late December of being on the River Forest Sustainability Commission, so I got to see Charlotte's presentation there as well. I also want to mention on behalf of Julie Muller, who can't be here tonight, but she wanted to reiterate her thanks to everybody for their work on this. And she did ask me to mention that those of you who know her know that she can't do a Green for Good presentation without mentioning waste. So she was recently involved with the recycling extravaganza that was put on originally by the district, taken over by the village this year. And based on seeing all the electronic waste that came from there, from residents as well as the district, just, you know, hoping we can continue a conversation about an electronic waste plan. And she also supervised the locker, school locker cleanout, and you know, observed that there's still a lot of unused supplies, and that looks forward to working on how we can working on that. Before I bring the other parents up, let me just ask, there was like a brief one-page summary for each school that when I checked the board packet right before I came tonight, I wasn't sure if I saw it in there, but did you each get it? Because I may have submitted it somewhat late.
It was not
so
in the
you'll
board
get it
packet.
Later, because, you know, and so we won't go into the details tonight of what each school did. But Heather Brockman, who was co-chair of Green for Good at Rosemount this year, she had an unexpected conflict, so couldn't be here tonight. Oh, okay. All right. Well, so then Heather's report on what we did at Roosevelt this year was the pilot student club. And then we have three main areas at Roosevelt. If you've been out to the Oak Avenue side, these raised bed gardens that we had parent volunteer Sabina Oberberger working with Mr. Cadlick. And those four beds are divided between his seventh grade science class, the Italian and French teachers, and the eighth grade humanities. So, you know, there's a variety of greens and things planted out there. Also, the planters in the front of the office, you may have noticed, were planted at different points in the season. There's also a certified Monarch Way station on the Oak Avenue side along the west wall, and parent volunteer Liz Zeal headed that up. And I heard at least one report of monarch butterflies in the area, because that a garden is only starting to mature now. We are aware that we want to get out there during the summer and figure out, you know, how to kind of clean, keep those beds clean and nice looking. Lunchroom waste reduction was led by Julie Muller, and with Charlotte and Mackenzie's work, and the Fun Lunch team this year actually also did a really great thing, which was they worked with the suppliers to try to reduce the waste from the packaging, because we found we were busy trying to tell everybody what to do, and it's really confusing when you've got a foil thing that says, well, the plastic part is not recyclable, the foil can be recycled, and so they tried to work with the suppliers to come up with more, say, like compostable packaging for salads. And then the other main thing at Roosevelt was the end of year locker cleanouts that I just mentioned. So those were the highlights from Roosevelt for this year. So Laura's going to come up. But let me see, I should mention that Laura is going to become the chair at Roosevelt next year. Luckily we're not losing her, but she's moving on from her role as Lincoln chair of Green for Good. So Laura's going to come up, and I think...
Right. Moving on up. Finally graduated from Lincoln. I'm recapping Lincoln.
I think
activities. Lincoln activities, Green for Good activities, start out the year with... Look at your lunch, where we ask parents to evaluate their kids' lunches and try not to have them overpacking, so they're wasting food because the parents are overpacking. We do waste-free Wednesdays every Wednesday, beginning of the year, all the way through till Earth Week, where we do a big waste-free challenge during Earth Week. Walking to school, we do a walk-to-school event in October, and then a much more focused walk-to-school event during Earth Week in April, which is a national walk-to-school. Actually, the October one is too, but we don't focus on it as much because, I don't know why, committee restraints. Collection of school supplies at the end of the year. We've collected school supplies probably in maybe 6 years or so in a row, maybe 7 years or so. The last few years we've donated to the Maywood School District. The last probably 3-4 years we've donated to Maywood. This year they asked me if they could give me an award. But because they love our supplies so much, I said, no, you cannot give me an award, but they're going to be sending a letter, which I'll pass on to the board, Every time I deliver these supplies to them, they are just so excited. They take these supplies that we donate at the end of the year and they package them into individual boxes for their student population just over the other side of the river, which is nice to think that our waste is actually appreciated and used. That's our final event of the year. During Earth Week, we do lots of waste-free challenge and walk-to-school ribbons that we give out. And Waste-Free Wednesday is pretty much our big event throughout the year. Moving into Roosevelt, I hope to maybe bring a few of those things into the middle school. I'm very anxious to have a student group that's hopefully as enthusiastic as Charlotte is to accomplish some fun goals here at Roosevelt. I'm looking forward to doing that with. We have a very good committee here at Roosevelt that's gardening, doing Muller's going to stay on, hang on there with me for one more year. and get us transitioned and hopefully be here for the next 4 years running the Green for Good here. So thank you.
Well,
I have a question.
Yeah.
Has there been any discussion among whoever orders the supplies in the first place has there been any communication to
So at Lincoln at the beginning of the school year for a couple of years, all of the PTO heads that had events that use reusables like pancake breakfast and fourth grade breakfast. The lunch has been challenging because it's kind of coming from another source, but we have tried to purchase in bulk the compostable one-time use plates, forks, cups, things like that we have in storage in the basement that PTO members can use so that we are reducing our waste and getting things into compost versus landfill. And I think I would love to see that become more of an overarching thing that happens at all three schools, maybe even done from the Anthony Cozy. And pile more on to Anthony Cozy.
It's the thing to do.
Because he can get it done. And I think it would be nice if we could have that as a standard across the board in all the schools so that we're not creating so much waste in our schools.
No, but I mean from the actual supplies, like supplies they use in the classrooms.
Oh, you mean school supplies?
Yeah, right.
No. It seems that it's very difficult. Fun Lunch and school supplies are two fundraisers. So we've had challenges getting those two things changed because then they're no longer fundraisers. If you're no longer purchasing supplies or you're no longer, your Fun Lunch costs more because the reusable or the plates and things that are compostable cost more. It just becomes less of a fundraiser, and it's been challenging to get those two things synced up with the values of the Green for Good and making money at the same time.
Yeah, I understand.
Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean we're not trying or that we're thinking about it. It's definitely on my radar. Can't be on every committee.
I think school supplies, too, there may be conversations possible, too, with teachers about what they want to have.
I think some teachers are thinking about it, others are not.
I love the locker cleanup, though.
Yeah.
And sending supplies because the kids want to start the year fresh, but to somebody that's something they didn't have.
Absolutely.
And we started doing that with HeartWorks years ago, and I always thought it was a great idea.
Yeah, our garbage is really pretty good stuff.
Yeah, it is good stuff.
Hello there, I'm Erin Dowdle. I am the incoming co-chair for the Willard Green for Good Committee. I'm also an incoming parent with a kindergartner, so bear with me, I'm very new to all of this. I will give you a summary of what has happened previously. So some of the big emphasis that the Green for Good Committee at Willard partakes is the reusable party wear for all the room parents to use for each activity throughout the year instead of purchasing one-time use supplies. They do a big initiative for the three-bin lunchroom education at the beginning of the year for the incoming first graders to teach them how to compost, how to recycle, how to properly sort their trash. And bike safety also is discussed, but it's something that goes throughout the year multiple times. They discuss walking to school, bike safety, finding alternative modes of transportation. In September and October, Willard has a costume exchange where kids bring in their costumes that are used one time, and they collect them, and right now they're all stored in the attic. They'll be brought out again for the upcoming Halloween season. During Earth Week, there's various activities throughout the day, throughout the week, where we encourage children to walk, to they create an Earth Tree outside the office, no waste lunches, and then they as well participate in the end of the year locker room supply, school supply cleaning out. I don't have very many details because it's not around for that, but it tends to be a big success as well. So I look forward to presenting when I've actually been able to participate, but I'm passionate about this. So
the PTO loves incoming kindergarten parents.
Well, thank you everyone who participated and gave an update. As you can see, the district-wide initiatives are very robust, and you can tell that the individual school buildings initiatives and accomplishments are robust. So we'll report back to you periodically, and thank you for your time.
Thank you.
And Dr. Fonda does want to say something, and then we're going to move on to the tri-board equity.
Yeah, just very quickly, you know, that this is this group of folk who are here tonight, I know, are emblematic of kind of the even deeper passion that a whole swath of our families and students and staff have towards sustainability. But this has required kind of a whole new way of doing things. And, you know, while that meeting, that formation meeting last year to set goals and core beliefs and all that was a really important opportunity, it also represented a leap of faith for our Green for Good. And the leadership that the folks that are here tonight, Aaron, I haven't had a chance to work with you yet, but I know you will follow in the footsteps of these fabulous folks. And Beth particularly has really been tremendous. Anthony, I know, has been supporting Green for Good since it was formed, which was back in 2008, maybe, along with Julie. So this is obviously also long throw work, but how exciting to see our students really embracing the way they are. And Charlotte, your leadership, I know, is a great beacon for the other students. Hopefully you'll take some of that passion with you to the high school.
What high school are you going to, Charlotte?
OPRF.
All right. You may want to think about coming back and mentoring some 8th and 7th graders and making sure the program works right.
And at the end of the superintendent's report, I had two items I was going to present, but I got to do one of them now because there's a certain audience member who's here, which was to laud our outstanding Roosevelt Middle School yearbook. I know several of the parents probably in the audience have seen it, but if you hadn't, I wanted to share this copy with the board and send it around tonight.
Do we have to sign it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And kudos to the students certainly who worked on it. There was a tremendous amount of leadership provided here by Ms. Amy Raines. So I'll let you all take a look at that if you haven't seen it yet.
Okay, so moving on, we now have the Tri-Board Equity Committee recommendations coming up. Catherine and Sarah, you are on stage. And by way of introduction, I don't know if you know these two fine women, but they've been phenomenal to work with on this initiative. They've been very thoughtful. And really, I think it's because of board members like this in Oak Park that we have an opportunity for true collaboration. The best part about this report, I think from our board's perspective, is I'm not giving it.
You don't know that yet.
Does everyone have a copy of?
Yes, it's in our packet.
Great. So, hi, I'm Sarah Spivey. I'm on the D200 board. Thank you so much for giving us your time this evening.
Catherine Label from D97.
So about a year ago, we decided, came out of a meeting, actually, I think that we had with Superintendent Condon, to try to figure out a way to be more collaborative in some of our equity initiatives. It seems like we're all working towards a common goal, but we're all doing it separately. And we felt that there really might be some good use of our resources in trying to do this in a more sort of synergistic fashion with all three boards working together. So each board nominated a person. We are they, and we've been working sort of diligently over the course of the past year, month by month, to try to figure out what those common goals might be and what ways we might have. And really, part of this is to save tax dollars. If we work together, we figure that there might be some real tax savings involved just by the economy of scale of having all three boards trying to sort of do some of the same stuff. So we'll just go through and present them. If there are questions, please stop us at any point.
Okay, so we have four recommendations coming out of our tri-board.
The first is that each district will inventory their current equity initiatives, and the point of that would be to share, first of all, with each of the boards what the current initiatives are, and then to maybe take a step further and look for alignment or maybe gaps. You know, it's a good way to hold each other accountable. It's a good way to see what the other districts are doing and find some common ground and also some room to grow.
It's page 98 in your packets if you're looking.
So our second initiative is around organizing town halls. We did one sort of joint town hall, which I believe is the first one ever, which is sort of hard to imagine, but that was, what, a year ago?
About a year ago.
Where all three boards came together to talk about equity. We also were privileged to be invited to your board meeting with the NEP, which was, what, 8 months ago now, 6 months ago? I will speak for myself. I found both of those to be of tremendous value, and I would certainly appreciate going to more of them. So our thought was to try to organize a third town hall involving all three boards this time, working with a group, perhaps the NEP. The high school does not currently contract with them, but that is something that I'll be encouraging my board members to look at. Perhaps that would be yet another economy of scale, but if all three of us were to host an event, perhaps involving the NEP as facilitators, we could save a little bit of money, but also be able to provide some ongoing board education, so that way we have some continuity from kindergarten all the way through high school in terms of our equity equity initiatives and our equity lens.
Building off of that, our third recommendation is to collaborate for professional development purposes. So not only for board, but for staff and faculty. Try to find some cost savings, try to find, again, the alignment piece. I think to Sarah's point about when we all participated in D90's NEP training, I think one huge benefit, for me at least, was to get to know the other board members, to feel like after that session I could reach out and ask questions or have coffee. That it made a big difference. As a new board member, it made a big difference to me just to have that collaboration, but to take it a step further and potentially realize some cost savings and also to benefit the students. I think our, you know, we're all feeding into the same place, and our students and our staff and our board should be using the same language, and we should be understanding what each other are doing and how we can come together for the benefit of the students.
Then lastly, we got some input from the Collaboration for Early Childhood around their efforts to try to educate young parents of young children. One of the things that came out of that in our meeting with Carolyn Newberry-Schwartz was to see if it might be possible to have somebody, a dedicated person in each school, to help ensure that any parent who comes in with questions or concerns about 0 to 5 education would be able to be matched up with somebody potentially from the collaboration or elsewhere to get them whatever resources they may need, whether it's 0 to 3 evaluations or, you know, OT, PT, like whatever sort of therapeutic interventions might be required, or even the evaluation to find out if there are any therapeutic interventions that would be helpful. I think we all are well aware that the achievement gap sort of yawns widest a long day once students get to high school, but we already see it in third grade. So the sooner we can get at those students who might be in need of special services, the better, and the more cost-effective ultimately it is for all three taxing bodies. But most importantly, the better the outcomes long-term for our students. So that was our fourth and last recommendation for this year, is to not necessarily hire anybody to do this, but just have a dedicated person in each building who's responsible for being the keeper of that information, so that if somebody comes in to the Welcome Center or the information desk, there's an automatic, you know, everyone knows who to call to get them connected to the services that they're looking for. So, any questions? You guys are easy.
It would be unlike you not to have any questions. Yeah.
Just number four, I guess, how is that vision for number four different than how we already operate when a parent comes in to one of the schools or one of the two schools and says, okay, we're going to go to kindergarten, we're going to go K through 8 here, and my daughter is 1 year old, so what should I do?
So that's a great question, and right now the answer is kind of anecdotally, it all depends. And that's where we need to probably tighten it up. If it so happens, depending upon the age of the child, that the parent shows up first at a school information night, it's possible that their first contact is a principal. As is often the case here, when a parent of a particularly young child, maybe they're concerned about developmental delays or something like that, their first interaction with the district is often with the director of special education. And Karen, specifically, and some of our special education facilitators have been the ones who've, in the past, been kind of the liaisons to the collaboration. Collaboration for Early Childhood is fabulous in terms of providing us with resources to distribute, have a get to know your child booklet and a lot of support information. But I think the intention behind this would be that we would memorialize this such that, and importantly, everyone in the schools would know that if someone comes forward with a specific type of request, that it ought to go probably through at least one individual or a school-based individual, and that we're ensuring there's a follow-up.
Sure. The idea, Rich, is to move from being episodic to systematic. And one of the big gaps in early childhood is the pipeline, getting people in that need the services, and precisely because it doesn't have brick and mortar. Schools have brick and mortar, and everyone knows what the neighborhood schools are. So what we want to do with the Early Childhood Collaborative, actually, is advertise that hey, you got a baby and you don't know where to go, go to your school, your neighborhood school, they will have information to get you into the network.
Do our pediatricians have that information as well?
I don't know if they do or they don't, but what's going to happen is there'll be someone at every school, or maybe two, because people take vacations and days off, that have all this information and can just get them into their network. Mm. And why that's a really good equity piece, and Sarah and Catherine can confirm this, but all the research shows K-12 is not very good at closing achievement gaps that kids show up with. The K-12 system doesn't do that well. It's good at moving kids forward a year at a time. But if you already have a gap, it's not good at closing that gap.
Well, the most positive time to intervene is when the children are younger.
Right.
So that's why I asked if pediatricians feed into this, because they would be the first people to flag developmental delays.
They do. I mean, my son had a developmental delay, and our pediatrician urged me to get him screened through early intervention in Illinois. And then he transitioned into early childhood for the district.
I will say that I'm sure the Oak Park and River Forest pediatricians, I mean, certainly my son also has some issues. That sounds so mean, but he also is in need of some special services. And my pediatrician was very helpful, but she didn't really know how to get me connected. She's great. I love her. But if I hadn't been on a school board, I'm not really sure that I would have been equipped to find him the help that he needed
that
to get him hooked
that,
up with PKP.
That
and
could be closed with better information to the pediatrician.
It is, but the thing is, it depends on where your pediatrician is. If your pediatrician is in this village, then they won't know what the resources are here. They'll know the resources may be near them or in the city. So you need some point of reference or someone.
I understand. I'm just trying to think of the easiest.
Yeah,
the
pediatricians definitely have resources, but it may not be convenient for you, depending on where you live.
No, I mean, I completely agree with the statement. I'm just looking for clarification.
Sure.
Is this additional staff? Is this
No. We're not hiring. We're just going to train.
Maybe the nurse.
Because I know that we've done it. I think we've done a pretty good job. It's hard to quantify something like that. 100%. We need to bring people in, and I like that idea that it would be
an
specific, kind of.
And maybe too, even if it's just if it's open where people don't even have to necessarily think there's an issue. Like, so people just say, "Hey, just come. This is available. We have this for you. You don't have to necessarily see anything, because sometimes you don't notice anything if you have, one kid. And that's your only kid. You don't know. You don't have anything to compare it to. So you don't really know that you should go take the kid in to get evaluated for anything."
So is there an outreach component to this? Just sounds like if someone asks for it, we'll tell them.
Right.
We hope that there will be. So we want to build that with the collaborative, right? So start marketing, advertise, whatever words you want to use, that, hey, if you've got questions about anything involving your birth to whatever, go to your local school. Even if you don't, you can get a bunch of information,
yeah.
everything you need to know.
Yeah.
We do want to market that because we want to close that pipeline gap.
Mm-hmm. So targeting like library, any kind of programming that
yeah.
has the 0 to 3
yeah.
or 0 to 4 range.
So preschool programs, et cetera.
Story hours, preschool age activities.
Grocery stores, churches.
Right. Like that.
Mm-hmm.
And in fairness,
yeah.
the collaboration has been
yeah.
extraordinary at this.
Mm-hmm.
They've already, you know, really found ways to kind of leverage a lot in the community. But this fourth recommendation is probably most important of the three districts to District 90 because we're the only one of the three that's not formally a partner with the collaboration. So for us to do this more intentionally would really, I think, give us a lot of bang for our
buck. I'd also recommend reaching out to the real estate board too.
Well, that's a good idea.
They're the ones who are
bringing new families.
Yeah. That's a really good suggestion.
Yeah, it's part of their welcome package even.
Yeah. That's a great idea.
But I will say there's a lot of, for Oak Park especially, there's a lot of kids that are preschool who aren't actually enrolled in preschool,
mm-hmm.
nor care by grandparents or other family caregivers. Which is why we were thinking that the schools might be a really good nexus for them to be able to get the information.
Plus, there are a number of situations where we have captive audiences at open houses and curriculum night where you're speaking to families in one fell swoop, right? The 10 minutes of information could be critical for some of the families that are there. They think for other reasons, but maybe have a little one coming up that need the services.
Excellent presentation.
Thank you
very much.
And we will put this up as an action item. How long will that take?
So next month.
Next month.
If you'd like.
Yeah.
That's good.
Approved.
Thank you again.
Just
thank
one
you.
Quick thought before you guys walk away. One of the challenging things I think for this committee will be to show the community what it means to be collaborating. Right? It's one thing to stand up and say, okay, here's what we're doing, here's what we're doing, here's what we're doing. Great, great, yay, yay. But what does it mean that we're collaborating? Is there a path that goes from the elementary school districts through the high school that a parent could say, ah, I can see the benefit of these districts talking to each other and sharing. What does it ultimately mean for the students who are moving through these districts? That's going to be the challenge because these systems are all very different, right? The high school is a big system. So that's going to be the challenge to show what it means, what the value is of the collaboration beyond just saying, patting ourselves on the back and saying, hey, aren't we all doing such a great job at collaborating?
Yeah.
So what?
We're Stacy, we're at the crawling before you
No, I know.
Stage.
I'm just thinking ahead. And
there was a recommendation, actually,
yeah.
after our presentation, just on the side that hasn't been presented yet, but possibly for the three districts that we can coordinate opportunities for our curriculum directors and our accountability officers to get together to talk about some of these
right.
things, right?
Mm-hmm.
So taking it to the next practical level.
Maybe we can get a grant from the Oak Park Community Foundation to work on. I don't know why I
should certainly apply.
It doesn't be part of
see if we know someone.
It can also be part of our town hall, though, too, right? Like
right.
that might be one of the things that we discuss
right.
in our hopefully our town hall, which I anticipate, if all three boards are in agreement, would be sometime early second semester next year.
Yeah.
Maybe January.
Yeah.
Yes, we thought.
I feel pretty good about this. I mean, hearing this because, you know, I think it shows we're all committed. All three entities are committed. We're all on the same page, and we're trying to employ the same processes at all three districts to make sure gaps are closed so no one's falling through or getting missed. So,
Judy, you know, it's funny, we talk a lot about articulating instruction, pedagogy, et cetera, all that stuff. We should be articulating our approach to equity so it's a seamless environment culturally for kids.
Yeah.
Right? I think that's really important. I think that's a long-term win, by the way. And helps kids feel comfortable. Now, obviously, if you read the research and literature, feeling comfortable is step one to academic achievement. So it is what it is.
And Catherine and Sarah specifically have been really tremendous in acting as liaisons
Stars.
With both boards. They, in addition to all this work, they've been coming to Board of Education, D90 Board of Education Equity Committee meetings over the course of the last year and a half. least.
Yeah, they've added a ton of value. I mean, I can't stress it enough. They've added a ton of value. They're very committed. They have a high level of energy and intellect, and it's just been a thrill working with them.
And it's a lot of meetings.
It's so worth it, but it doesn't feel like work.
I will say that it might be the case that occasionally at a tri-board equity committee meeting there is alcohol.
It's not until the business is done.
You might hold them at Maya. It's a central location.
We'll get you on the technology committees too, and then we won't be comparing apples to Windows.
There you go. That was good.
Thank you.
Sure. Thanks, Sarah. Thanks, Jason. Great presentation. All right, so now getting back to the superintendent's report on action items, why don't we pick up there?
Yes, we would be thrilled if the board would consider our resolution regarding compliance with prevailing wage. And so, Anthony, maybe you'd introduce that. I know that's a relatively quick topic.
Sure. It happens each year.
Important all the same.
Happens each year at this time, a resolution to pass this resolution regarding compliance with wages of employees in public works law. And in Cook County, there, as current as can be, is with the prevailing wage rates as of September 1, 2017. It used to be on a monthly basis, but they've held true to the ones on 2017 as I've listed in here. So if there are no other questions, hopefully you can approve this resolution so it will be in compliance. And we will be submitting this to the appropriate entities after approval.
So do we have any discussion? Are there any questions about this? This is a legal requirement that we have to deal with. So if there's no questions, then I would just need a motion.
So moved.
I have a second.
Second.
Mr. Davis?
Yes.
Mrs. DeGracias?
Yes.
Mrs. Hickey?
Yes.
Mr. Martieri?
Yep.
Mr. Moore?
Yes.
Dr. Thompson?
Yes.
Ms. Williams?
Yes.
And if you'd like to kind of keep rolling through these subsequent items.
Okay, the next one is the resolution authorizing a permanent inter-fund accounting transfer from the Education Fund to the Debt Service Fund in the amount of $121,650.60. That's to cover our capital lease payments on our copier equipment. It happens this time every year. It's basically for accounting reasons because these funds need to be paid for out of the Debt Service Fund but really funded through the Education Fund. You're budgeted for this amount, almost exactly.
Any discussion? May I get a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Not enough
yet. We always need that second.
Mr. Davis?
Yes.
Mrs. DeGracias?
Yes.
Mrs. Hickey?
Yes.
Mr. Martieri?
Yes.
Mr. Moore?
Yes.
Dr. Thompson?
Yes.
Ms. Williams?
Yes.
Shall I continue?
Please.
You'll see a list of our meeting minutes from closed sessions. This is our semi-annual review since we did the last one in December. And these show all of the meeting minutes that were from closed sessions since that time in December. And we are recommending that they remain closed, so including their audio recordings. If there are no questions, a motion would keep them closed.
So moved.
Second.
Ms. Williams?
Yes.
Dr. Thompson?
Yes.
Mr. Moore?
Yes.
Mr. Martieri?
Yep.
Mrs. Hickey?
Yes.
Mrs. DeGracias?
Yes.
Mr. Davis?
Yes.
The next, page 96, this is the list of closed session meeting audio tapes from this period of time. The requirement is that they be 18 months. Once you get them past 18 months, they can be destroyed, but the Department of Labor actually has a longer requirement of 2 years, so these are the ones that have just passed the two-year time frame. So you'll see a list of several Board of Education meetings and one committee of the whole meeting that we are hoping that you approve that they be destroyed.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Mr. Davis?
Yes.
Mrs. DeGracias?
Yes.
Mrs. Hickey?
Yes.
Mr. Martieri?
Yep.
Mr. Moore?
Yes.
Dr. Thompson?
Yes.
Ms. Williams?
Yes.
All right, and then that circles us, having gone through all the action items, back to the remaining information items.
That was worth something that I have.
Yeah, the next one would actually be, if you're on a roll, Anthony, our 2018-19 proposed budget calendar.
Mm-hmm.
It starts on page 100 of the packet.
Yes, this is very consistent with past years, those of you who don't remember. You'll see a first draft of the tentative budget for 2018-19 prior to the July 6th regular board meeting. I believe it's scheduled for a half an hour or maybe an hour before. I'm sure we'll find some time later in this board meeting when that actual time frame is. In fact, it doesn't say on this agenda, but I believe it's 6:30. And we call it the Finance Committee meeting, and that's when you'll see it. We'll move into a formal review of a revised budget. If there are any changes, any recommendations, any enrollment changes, staffing changes, that's usually what precipitates a change in the first draft of the second revised draft. On August 20th, prior to that date, we'll publish a required hearing legal notice on August 16th, and it'll be on public display of that tentative budget on August 17th for the 30 days through September 17th, when we'll have our required budget hearing prior to the regular board meeting, with the hopes, can't count my chickens, with the final board approval of that budget at the regular board meeting on September 17th. Any questions about that tentative budget calendar? Like I said, very consistent with prior years.
It's worked well in the past.
Okay, thank you.
Next item we wanted to share tonight, and I suspect there'll probably be some discussion about this, but it is for the board's first consideration, the strategic planning executive summary, or what we come to term the strategic planning scorecard. I'd like to start by thanking Dawn for her multifaceted efforts in putting this document together, and then kind of share a little bit about how it's intended to present the progress that the district has or hasn't made in some cases on our action objective plans. You know, there's been a lot of discussion about whether or not this is or isn't the best way to present this information. And before last year, you'll recall, we kind of came forward with a few different iterations, and this was the preferred, but we acknowledge that there may be better ways to continue to present this moving forward or ways to refine it. So we're always grateful for any feedback you might have. The intended outline of this is that the first document here, which is on pages 101 and 102, is intended to be very, very high level. It just provides a kind of color-coded overview as to the degree to which the specific action objectives were accomplished. One of the challenges we have in this, though, is that sometimes the specific action objectives are components of a larger goal. And this is very definitely the case, for example, when you start talking about things like equity issues. We might have a specific action objective, for example, in one year where we looked at the process of reviewing and refining our recruiting and hiring practices. Well, we did that specific thing, but as was acknowledged earlier, that's a multi-year initiative. Now we've got to implement it year after year after year. So there's been a lot of debate about, you know, when you get into then the weeds on the color coding, well, should something be designated, like the example I just gave, as a multi-year initiative? Or, more realistically, did the goals for that specific year, were they met, and should be considered as, you know, having been accomplished? And that really does start to get difficult. In the past, District 90 strategic plans were usually much, much more granular. Those of you who've been on the board sometime remember the prior iteration where literally it was a 40-plus page document, and it outlined in very small font all of the specific, not only goals, objectives, steps that would be taken. And what happened is it was so detailed that it really ended up tying the board administration's hands. The opposite can be said here. If by design, this strategic plan approach that we use is obviously intended to be very broad and flexible, which is great. It allows it to be adaptive, but it makes it hard for us to really feel good about, you know, reporting things at a high level in a way that people don't maybe lose something.
Yeah, so I think the easier thing is less green, more blue. And
in terms of colors?
In terms of colors. Okay. Because if you think about it, there are multi-year initiatives, so you wouldn't go to a blue on an action objective item unless it had been commenced. So everyone understands if you're going to set up a new hiring system or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. We've done it. It's commenced. So now it goes from red or yellow to blue because it's ongoing. It's not green. It's not done. It's not that's an ongoing thing. But you've commenced it and it's in process, so we know that it's going forward and it's in process. I think green should really only be used for very limited things. And there are some action items here that were very limited things, like a
furniture purchaser. Yes.
Green. That's a green item, man. We were going to do it. We were going to do it by X date. It's done.
Great.
So I would make that recommendation.
Okay.
A lot more blue, and blue only if it's been commenced. So we know it's truly in process. You've started, you've taken whatever. And if there are initial steps you had to take, then in the more narrative document, you could say these initial steps were taken
okay.
this year, and this is, you know, so you could give the narrative. But at Blue, at least we know you did what you were supposed to do, and it's in process.
It's on
and
track.
Ask questions. It's on track.
Okay. Very good.
That's well, good my initial look at it was that we have so much green. What have we got left to do on our strategic plan?
No, a lot of that green should be blue, Barb. One other little nit. You know, the first goal under high-quality workforce, shouldn't that be under equity?
That's exactly else? What I was about to say. That doesn't seem like it
doesn't really fit there.
It's not a workforce issue.
Well, so that's an interesting challenge, admittedly, with the way in which this process kind of has evolved. So the board will recall that annually the administrative team reviews elements that they're suggesting as potential action objectives that reflect the goals in the larger, higher-level strategic plan for the forthcoming year. And then those recommendations are sent forth for that action objective team to refine and, you know, can create their action plan. We found a couple of occasions where the action objective team has massaged things such that what came out the other end may not necessarily be what was intended going in, and yet we've kind of been conflicted because to what degree do we change that or remand that from them and put it somewhere else if they've begun the work? That's kind of what happened here, frankly. The other one where that happened, you'll see, is this thematic unit development. Mm-hmm. That's also a high-quality workforce item. You think, well, how did that happen? Well, so the origin of that was that there was a subgroup within that action objective team who felt really strongly that it was important teachers have the opportunity to collaborate together, which is a workforce issue. Mm-hmm. And then the discussion was, well, what would they collaborate on? The development of the thematic unit, which was an interesting idea, but then unfortunately also inconsistent with some of our CNI plans, obviously, with the curriculum reviews that we've been doing and some other important equity work. So frankly, that's why it's red. We felt like we weren't able to embark on it at this time.
But that's, I understand that it's organic, which is what you're describing as an organic process.
Right.
It's still that objective belongs in equity. It is not a high quality workforce objective. Mm-hmm. Might be members of the team. You could star that the team working on that is this team.
Okay.
But logically, it belongs in another category.
Or under student growth and achievement.
Or under student growth and achievement.
And that might make sense.
Either of those are fine.
So the origin of that, just for your peace of mind though, in this case,
I might like that better.
Equity was not an element of the plan.
Right.
When it was developed.
Right.
Yeah. So you had the five categories.
Yeah.
And so the equity component developed specifically with the goals that came from the equity committee and the IAB.
Yeah.
So it's not a problem. Obviously, this document is intended to be the board's directives. So for us to move these components and put them in the hands of other groups is fine.
Apparently, when I read it first, I agreed with you more.
Yeah.
Okay. So can we work on this and bring it back to you for more consideration next month?
Yes.
Yeah, that sounds great. It's really, though, it's really a nice communications piece.
Yeah,
so I think it's going to end up in a good place.
We want to get it right.
Yeah.
So, great.
And it does appear online?
Yes, very definitely.
Under the strategic plan on the website.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. And we've usually, in the fall as well, in September, sent it out to families very specifically and staff. We use it at the beginning of the school year. So it's important we get it right now. The timing is kind of essential. Before I move to the next item on here, I did want to give a quick kudo to someone in our midst. Speaking of Dawn, you're probably aware that she was the District 90 representative to the Oak Park River Forest Community Foundation Leadership Lab this year. And I thought I'd send around a copy of the program from her graduation.
Very nice.
Very good.
So the district enrollment report is found on page 111. The big takeaway that I guess it's really important we wanted to share with the board right now, and we specifically included the Lincoln School enrollment projections. We are on the cusp. I haven't spoken with Casey today. It's entirely possible that we've passed it, but of needing a fifth section of first grade.
Wow.
We have a kind of a set of guidelines that we use about when to add sections from 3 to 4 and from 4 to 5, and the numbers right here are 2 students away from reaching that point.
I was just wondering, where would that classroom be? The multi-purpose room?
Or? Very likely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it might not, this specific first grade class may or may not be in that room.
Mm-hmm.
There could be another teacher in that room, but we'd be using that room for instruction.
Room.
Yeah. So, yet one more reason this board was wise to add those classrooms a few years back. We didn't know we'd need them for sure, or how we'd need them, but it's proven to be a good decision.
So, did our forecaster forecast this?
Mm-hmm. He did, and well, he did
really?
More so in first, second, and third, but he totally missed it in K.
Yeah.
So this is very unusual that we would have this low in enrollment in kindergarten.
This 36?
Yes. With a broad brush, the forecaster indicated in the geodemographic report that we would likely see increases at Lincoln School in the mid to upper grades. So when I say with a broad brush, that's what I'm talking about. First grade, that's not mid to upper in my mind. That's still obviously primary level. But there was nothing in the geodemographic report that would have indicated we'd still midsummer. It's not maybe not midsummer yet. Yeah, it feels
like
it's
still early in the summer.
Yeah, I was going to say the likelihood that it's going to go up
is 36 is very, very low for us. You know, normally we would add that fourth section of K closer to 50. So, I don't think we did. I honestly don't, as strange as that sounds.
Well, we still got the development on Madison that's selling slowly.
We do. And to put in perspective, I know the board is familiar with these patterns from the past. Significant increases at first are not unexpected. I mean, it exceeded our projection, but it's not unexpected. So, the other grade levels at Lincoln at least seem to be in pretty good shape, and at Willard we're running right down the middle at the moment. We will likely be coming back to you in July with the request for an extra 0.1 FTE in PE, strange as that sounds, but largely that's due to a scheduling need, since we have Terry Panecki, you remember, a full-time PE teacher who retired from working at both schools. We're going to need to have two half-time people instead of one full-time working at the two schools because the schedule needs will overlap the way, or won't allow for the same person to have the same schedule as in the past. So we'll need probably an additional 0.1 to pull that off. But right now, those are the only kind of early summer likely increases. You have in your personnel report, of course, the recommendation to rehire a couple of teacher aides. That too is not unusual. The board often in the past has had to do a reduction in force teacher aides in the spring, and then we find that families with special needs students come to the hall in the summer and we need to hire them. So these are fairly typical patterns. It's just unusual, as Nicole mentioned, that we now have one grade level with five. The last time we had a need potentially to have a fifth grade, or a fifth section, excuse me, was at Lincoln, and we didn't have the space 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that had to be accommodated with hiring of a teacher aide to go between. Classroom.
Was that with the current seventh grade class here?
No, that would have been the current. I think it is the current fifth grade.
Okay.
No, I'm sorry, you're correct. It's the current seventh grade because they were fourth grade at the time. Good memory. So, anyway, that's sum total.
Is what it is.
And then on page 113, we also have just a copy. This is a board only document. I know the board had requested to have some items provided for them for their oversight that we're required to comply with on an annual basis, and this is one of them. The annual safety report is something that we're required to do by the State Board of Ed. The oversight agency for this is West 40, which is our intermediate service center. And the only thing that's a little bit different about this annual safety meeting is that board will probably recall we moved this one up earlier. We've typically done it in May because it is the first step in our then using the summer months to kind of make changes in our safety plans, routines, and procedures and launching them in August. Because of some events that have happened, safety-related events in the country, this year we backed it up into March. And it was nice that we did because it has allowed us, I think, to get ahead of our safety review committee, which has now met a couple of times and is still hoping to bring forth some recommendations for how we can continue to improve our safety initiatives in District 90 early this fall. So
And there's a number of little recommendations and things that came out here, so I'm assuming they're going to be working.
Absolutely.
On
those,
right?
Yes.
So,
and we provide the minutes of the previous year's work at the subsequent meeting as well.
Great.
And then, hard to believe, last item, this has been, I know, a row tonight, is the board retreat for this coming summer. And I guess I just wanted to add this to the board agenda tonight. It looks like folks' schedules are such that people are going lots of different directions. And I just wanted to, you know, comply with the board's wishes about how you wanted us to proceed. We can continue to push dates out for August and see if there's something that lines up. Or the other option, if it's the board's wish, would be for us to try to do a board retreat immediately upon the start of the school year on a weeknight. That way we know that everyone was likely back in town. Of course, then you've got the challenge of work obligations and, you know, harriedness of the start of the school year.
Can we try both? Do push out to August to play with the dates, and then if that doesn't work, then go to...
Sure.
Yeah, I know Tracy said there's still a couple of possible dates she's holding in. I'm flexible. I mean, whatever the board wants is, you know, we need to have that long period of time to sit and chat with each other, but I don't think there's a huge difference in doing it early September versus mid-August. It's just whatever works for you.
Other than that, September is wild.
Yeah, September
people,
is wild.
For people with kids in school, it's a time when finding an evening is kind of horrifying.
Actually,
true.
It's pretty bad, too.
That's so true.
Yeah. Well, either way is hard, but
August is vacation.
It's all bad.
You know, high time.
We do need everybody there.
It. If we're
yes.
on vacation,
yes.
we can have it on the vacation spot. So.
Go
there you go.
Like,
as long as we can notice it up.
Victoria right? Beach. Let's rent a house.
We can have it at my house.
For the weekend?
I guess a 3-hour drive might be an inconvenience
it
to the public.
It sleeps 14.
All right.
Sleeps 14.
Public
we'll
is invited.
We'll do that. And if it's if the board's comfortable with this, we'll try to do that like in the next 48 hours. So if you will watch your emails, and then, you know, hopefully Tracy won't harass you by calling. Fill out the doodle.
She couldn't harass us if
she
tried.
She's fantastic in every way. So as if that's not enough, that's the board or the superintendent.
Okay, so I'm going to ask in a second for a motion to go into closed session. We will be taking some actions. I think when we come out, we have a personnel report, and we're going to set upcoming meetings. So if you want to hang around to hear what we do with that exciting personnel report and the setting of upcoming meetings, please feel free. If you are instead sane, you can go back to your homes. So I would need a motion to go into closed session according to Illinois law for the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the public body or legal counsel for the public body, including hearing testimony on a complaint lodged against an employee of the public body or against legal counsel for the public body to determine its validity.
Motion to go into closed session.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.